He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Just a feeling of uneasiness, and I wake up like several times during the night to check on my WhatsApp and Facebook profile account to see what's happening. It's not easy. I can tell you that we hadn't had enough sleep since the 21st of October.
Kia ora and welcome to the Voices podcast with me, Kadambri Raghukumar. In 2019, I was in Khartoum, Sudan, at the height of the revolution, living with friends who were part of the pro-democracy demonstrations around the city. Life seemed to have come to a total standstill, and almost everyone's days revolved around visiting the protest site. I remember someone saying that it felt like a freedom festival. There was a palpable sense of hope that kept people buoyant as the military overthrew President Omar al-Bashir and a transitional government was formed. 2.5 tentative years later, last week on 30th October, hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets protesting the coup 5 days earlier in which the military overthrew Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. These are sounds from the streets of Khartoum and Omdurman. Tires burning, people chanting, and the army's rapid response forces deployed everywhere. I'd been in touch with my friends in Khartoum up until the start of the protests, but since then it's been radio silence from their end. For the Sudanese diaspora of Aotearoa, this is a desperate time. I met with two of them, socially distant, outside of Auckland University last week.
I'm Reem Abbas. I'm a research fellow at Auckland University of Technology. I arrived in New Zealand in 2013 with my family from Sudan. We arrived as skilled migrants.
My name is Abdurrahman Bashir. I am 23 and I'm an urban planner and currently finishing my master's in urban design. I also am acting vice president for the Sudanese Society in New Zealand. It's heartbreaking to see that we're kind of back to the stage, but after 2019, there was such an intense sense of unity within the country that the will of the people is stronger than anything else, and we're seeing it again.
Here in Aotearoa, there are only all of about 200 Sudanese, and the past few weeks have seen them trying to provide support to each other in the face of uncertainty.
You know, it's difficult to tell you how we feel here in New Zealand, not only in New Zealand, but all around the world, the Sudanese in the diaspora. We woke up to the news of the military coup on the 25th of October last week. It was devastating for all of us.
Is your family there okay? Because I know that the power lines and the internet were shut for quite a few days.
Yeah, it's very important to point out that the internet has been cut off, and this is always not good news when they do that. So my family is fine, thank God. But we're really worried about our friends, the civil activists, and everybody there. Like the whole nation became one family since the December 19 revolution. And yeah, it is worrying.
Omar al-Bashir's 30-year-long dictatorship came to an end through mass protests in 2019. And since then, Sudan had been moving slowly towards democracy with elections slated for 2023. This time, though, the army have made arbitrary arrests of pro-democracy activists and government officials, protesters have been shot at, and there's been a crippling cash shortage. Watching all of this unfold from here in Auckland has been trying for Sudanese here during lockdown.
I think firstly it's frustration that we can't be raising awareness. Yeah, we want to be, we're respecting the lockdown rules. And in 2019 we had a pretty beautiful demonstration in Aotea Square, and we had support of other communities as well. So firstly it's frustration that we're very limited to our actions.
Although we're really far away from home, but we're physically here, but our hearts have always been in Sudan. This year it's been really difficult, to be just sitting home and waiting and worrying about who's going to be lost this time. We were really, really, the least I can say is worried. But the thing is that the 30th of October started in New Zealand 15 or 17 hours before Sudan. So I remember just getting done with everything at home and feeding the kids and just sitting in front of my computer, opening Facebook, checking my WhatsApp, and just hoping that everybody would be safe. Yet we lost more lives. And this continues to happen. We want to show the world the bravery of people who have been, who refused to be dragged into violence. I mean, every Sudanese person back home is a Gandhi. If you can just imagine someone who lost their child telling the rest of the demonstrators not to be dragged into violence, because this is a peaceful demonstration. They've been chanting Silmiya, 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 which means peaceful. Of course, the military ironically, they're saying that they're rectifying the path of the revolution, which is absolutely not true and illogical. The European Union, the United Nations, the United States, the United Kingdom, they've all made their stance clear. It would be really, really, it would have a great impact and really powerful to have New Zealand say where they stand and that they denounce this military coup and that they support the people in Sudan. I mean, it's a beautiful country. It's a democratic country here in New Zealand, and we're really happy that we're raising our kids here. So, yeah, we really call on them to make it clear to the whole world where they stand.
I too became curious to know what New Zealand's stance on the situation was. So I contacted the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Honourable Nanaia Mahuta. This is what her office said to me in a statement. New Zealand condemns the military takeover and is joining the international community in calling for the immediate return of the civilian-led transitional government. The release of detained civilians and the full reinstatement of civilian government is pivotal to Sudan's progress, stability and future. The protests come with ironic timing for Reem and Rahman, who for the past few months have been in the midst of organising an art exhibition on Sudan.
We received a very kind invitation from Auckland Museum to come and talk about Sudan, to have an exhibition about Sudan. Once the restrictions are released or eased, we'll be able to carry on with the exhibition. So I would like to invite our Kiwi friends and all the Kiwi community to come and listen to our story. We have, most importantly, about our fight for democracy.
And there's just so much to reflect on. So we're reflecting on, I guess, the history through the timeline. We're reflecting on Sudanese art, Sudanese physical pieces. Our country is going through a significant transition at the moment, but we do need the support and awareness of everyone here in Aotearoa just to shed light on what's happening.
It's expected that we have challenges during our journey towards democracy. We've gone so far so now that it's too late to go back. There's no way. As they say in Sudan these days, ridda mustahila, which means there's no going back. Sudan is a country with huge potential. To our people in Sudan, we say, shuhada'na ma matu, aishin ma thawar. Those we lost are never forgetting. We'll never forget them. And there will be a time where we will celebrate their lives. So hold on, and we'll continue doing whatever we can in the diaspora, knowledge sharing, communicating, coordinating, whatever we can do. So hold on, and we will have a bright future soon, inshallah.
Those are our Sudanese friends in Auckland hoping for a peaceful end to the current coup in Khartoum and for democratic civilian rule. Before I go, this week I had some really exciting news about Nawroz Ali. I spoke to him a few weeks ago in Kabul, where he was hiding from the Taliban. Nawroz had worked for the New Zealand Defence Force as a translator, but had been left behind when Western forces bailed out of Afghanistan in August as the Taliban took power. Nawroz Ali's life was in serious danger, but New Zealand authorities were able to get him out of Kabul a couple of weeks ago in October. After a week in the Middle East, he finally arrived in New Zealand on the 30th of October. I spoke to him in his MIQ a day after he arrived and started by welcoming him to Auckland. He was very jet-lagged, but thrilled nonetheless.
I'm feeling excited, happy. I came here with other people, like 7 to 9 families, but in total we are like 39 people who got evacuated. I was just counting minutes to be in New Zealand. The situation is still volatile. It's still dangerous.
Did you get a chance to see your father?
Unfortunately, no. I did not have a chance to see the family, mom and dad. I just had to say goodbye on phone because it was too risky for me to go back to Bamiyan. I was already in the news. Everyone was recognizing me. So for the whole trip, I stayed in Kabul for several months till I was evacuated. So I did not have a chance to visit the friends, family, especially the mom and dad. I had to say goodbye on phone.
So you're in the MIQ hotel right now. And what next? Do you know what life is going to be like after 14 days there?
I haven't been told yet where I will move, but hopefully I could hear some news from the officials where I will be moving after 14 quarantine days. And I will be looking forward to starting a new life in New Zealand, work hard, try hard, be a good citizen, adapt to the environment, make friends.
He's grateful New Zealand authorities have got him out safely, but he's worried about colleagues still left behind. Several people who served New Zealand and Afghanistan are still trapped there.
I was evacuated because I have passport, but still there are some colleagues who are left behind in Afghanistan that needs to be evacuated, but there is no solution for them how to be evacuated. So I hope the government could find a solution for that.
You can listen to Nauru's story before he got out of Afghanistan on Voices. Follow the Voices podcast for more stories like these on people from all around the world who now live in New Zealand. Find us on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Voices is produced weekly by me, Kadambri Raghukumar, and Tim Watkin is the executive producer for podcasts and series. Today's episode was engineered by Flo Wilson.